This video is sponsored by Incognig. Hey guys, so governments around the world are enacting measures that are making the lives of people searching for a better future increasingly hard. Some see it as a tragedy, others as an opportunity. Today we're going to talk about those who see it as an opportunity. And I want to focus on a genre of videos that has gained popularity recently. I call it deportation sensationalism. One channel in particular has caught my attention. It's run by content creator and real estate agent Cash Jordan. So Cash lives in New York, he hates progressive politicians, he loves ICE, and he also speaks like this.
Because as you're about to see, the US military has eyes and ears everywhere. On the ground, in the sky, and now also in massive tank-like Stryker combat vehicles.
I know it's tough to do a whole sentence with that tone. And without further ado, let's get into the video. Okay, so in the first part, we're going to look at some of the things I've seen and heard on Cash videos. This first part is about debunking and nuancing before we move on to the deeper stuff. So, who is Cash Jordan? Cash Jordan is primarily known for his real estate content on YouTube, reviewing different apartments in New York City. That's how I personally knew him until one of his more recent videos popped into my For You page. The video is titled, NYC just doomed 2 million people to homelessness. In it, Cash makes some interesting arguments about the reality of New York NIMBYs who oppose new semi-affordable housing development out of fear of seeing their properties price decrease, or the mismanagement of migrant shelters leading to tensions within communities. Cash then asks, where does the money go? Where does it go? Well, for him, the answer is the following.
$6.4 billion is how much New York City has spent on the migrant crisis in the past 2 years.
So when I first saw this, I thought, please, not another rich guy putting the blame on poor, vulnerable people. And then I looked at the content and realized that, yeah, here's another rich guy putting the blame on poor, vulnerable people. His channel is full of dystopian video titles and what looks like AI-generated thumbnails presenting New York as hell. And there's one topic that comes back again and again, the migrants. This is all very different from what Cash Jordan was known. On a Reddit post asking what is up with YouTuber Cash Jordan, many long-term followers shared their frustrations with the change of content, with one comment saying, quote, I'm sure there must be some money to make by painting a dystopian landscape. I used to watch him religiously. I never missed a video, and if he didn't pop in my feed, I'd go looking for his videos. However, I've given up on this guy. I live in Cleveland and I don't care what's going on in New York, especially if it's clickbait or dystopian landscape. If he truly is bothered by crime, get the hell out. I used to love seeing him sharing apartments, but I'll pass now, end quote. We know by now that sensational content do well online, so I wouldn't be surprised if this is a cash grab, but the more videos I watch, the more I understood that there are real political motivations behind it. There are in fact some key arguments Cash puts forward in his anti-migrant videos. We'll look at them in detail, but first I want to look at this table. It shows the percentage of foreign population in New York across time. And as you can see, numbers remain relatively stable. Once we have that in mind, it's important to acknowledge that there is a homelessness crisis in New York and that a portion of those homeless people are asylum seekers who are waiting for their demand to be processed, who are legally prevented from working, and who cannot get access to the sort of welfare that US citizens get. Now that this is said, let's take one of Cash's recurring argument, which is that migrants take residents' jobs. This argument is put forward in the context of street food vendors being raided by ICE.
Now, street vendors, as I noted and you noted, are particularly in a tougher position. Almost all of them are immigrants, up to 96%. And because of a strict city cap on permits, many do not have the proper vending license, which means if they're caught selling without a license, they can actually receive a criminal.
So what is being said here is that 96% of street food vendors are immigrants. Some of them have been working for years, feeding New York's workforce. They are very much needed, yet there's a strict cap on permits, so many do not have a permit, which means that if ICE comes and they don't have the license, they can get a criminal record, which means that you become an easy target for deportation.
They can actually receive a criminal.
So if you've got food vendors who are now disappearing or not coming to work because they're afraid of ICE, that obviously means that there is something up with their immigration status.
Yeah, when you reduce the scope of what is legal, you're more likely to have people flipping into the illegal side. Now, either you decide that illegal is bad, put them in jail, Or you pause for a second and wonder if we can change something about the law because those food vendors are needed. Next.
Any job given to someone illegally eliminates a job that a law-abiding resident would probably take in today's unpredictable economy. And that brings us to the real reason why whenever ICE raids a business, whether it's a warehouse or a food truck or a grocery store or even a corporate office, they're doing every law-abiding person in that place a favor.
I've heard this argument about foreigners taking residence jobs from people across the political spectrum, and while it may sound common sense, this argument isn't factually true. Okay, so before I explain you why this is not factually true, I want to take a little break to tell you about how you can, on a personal level, fight back against scammers profiting off your personal data, thanks to the sponsor of today's video, Incogni. You know, as a content creator, I'm pretty mindful about what I share online, but even when I try to keep certain things private, my personal information still ends up floating around the internet, thanks to data brokers. Basically, those companies collect and sell your data to businesses, marketing agencies, and even sketchy people search sites, which is why we all get so many spams, calls, emails, and texts. That's annoying, but there's also a real danger: identity theft and privacy risks. Because some of these sites list everything from your home address to financial details, making it way too easy for scammers to find you. So sure, you could ask these sites to delete your data yourself, but here's the catch. It takes hundreds of hours to track everything down, to file the removal request, and keep up with all of it. That's where Incogni comes in. Incogni automates the entire process by reaching out to data brokers on your behalf, requesting your data removal, and handling any objections from their site. And since these brokers constantly refresh their databases, Incogni keeps working in the background to ensure your data stay off the market. This is why their yearly subscription is a game changer, because privacy isn't just a one-time fix. If you care about protecting your personal information, Incogni makes it effortless. Take back your personal data with Incogni. You can use my code CAPELLE, CAPPELLE, at the link below and get 60% off an annual plan. It's incogni.com/CAPELLE. You'll find the link in the description box. Thank you, Incogni, for sponsoring the video. And now let's go back to it. This argument isn't factually true. Here's a study conducted across various countries on this very topic. The authors concluded that, quote, "Migrants choose locations with available jobs and fill labor shortages. Whether high or low-skilled, migrants rarely substitute directly for native workers. Instead, migrants often complement native workers or accept jobs that natives don't want or can't do. They create new jobs by increasing production, engaging in self-employment, and easing upward job mobility for native workers." End quote. Actually, during the Great Depression in the 1930s, the US thought that sending back hundreds of thousands of Mexicans and their children, many of them American citizens, would solve the economic crisis. The opposite happened. Mexican repatriations resulted in reduced employment and occupational downgrading for US natives. These patterns were stronger for low-skilled workers and for workers in urban areas. End quote. Since the announcements of mass deportations, the best US research labs have been losing some precious talents. This is the case for Xenia Petrova. Petrova was recruited to work at a lab at Harvard Medical School. She was part of a team investigating how cells can rejuvenate themselves with the goal of fending off the damage of aging. On February 16th, customs officials detained her at Logan International Airport in Boston for failing to declare samples of frog embryos she had carried from France at the request of her boss at Harvard. Obviously, those frog embryos had to come from France. The customs officials cancelled Petrova's visa on the spot and began deportation proceedings. That means the US could lose this very precious talent, as her colleagues say, to Russia. In the last few weeks, we've also seen an increasing number of foreign students being threatened of deportation, specifically those who have shown solidarity with Palestine. However, we know that freedom of speech, checks and balances in the form of protest, are necessary for the growth of a civilization. You know, a civilization that is never challenged, that cannot be critical of itself, is a civilization heading for collapse. Now, far from universities in rural areas, foreign workers are especially essential. Farms, construction businesses, medical centers are in desperate need of workers, but they just can't find them. In French Creuse, which is one of the least populated departments in the country, cheesemaker Thierry Piron struggled to find someone to help him. Eventually, he found Mansour Sow, who used to live in Mauritania, where he worked as a farmer until he was expropriated and had to leave or die. He found refuge in Peyrat-le-Château, but he could very soon be forced to leave as his asylum application was rejected. Many locals are furious and shocked by the absurdity of the situation, especially Thierry, who really get along with Mansour and can't find anyone to work with him. Same story for Sandra, a nurse from Serbia, who found a permanent contract on the very day she handed her CV in a medical center in rural France. We'll go back to her in a bit, but first I want to acknowledge that while migrant workers are needed, there are some cases in which they can in fact compete with local residents. But studies show that even in those situations, migrants tend to compete with all the migrants who maybe arrived before, all descendants of migrants. This is the case, for example, in Sunnyside, Washington, where farming corporations hire hundreds of foreign workers under the H-2A visa program, what some call a legal human trafficking scheme. Even though farmers are supposed to first hire US citizens, they find loopholes to bring foreign guest workers who have very limited rights and can therefore easily be exploited. It reminds us of the whole H-1B visa discourse a few months ago. While anti-immigration advocates opposed it, other members of the administration supported it. Elon Musk was one of the supporters, which is not surprising given that his companies partly rely on H-1B workers. The program makes those workers' immigration status dependent on their job, and bosses know this. They can use that against their workers to get more out of them. This leads me to the second point, which is, who actually profit from immigration? In Cash Jordan's videos, gangs and cartels are the biggest culprits. His coverage makes it seem like behind every food vendor, every restaurant, there are migrants paying off their debt to gangs and cartels. And while it is true that smugglers are making a lot of money off the struggles of migrants, fostering the suspicion that most migrants are connected to crime in one way or another is not fair at all. The journey migrants go through to flee their country can be traumatizing, to say the least. Actually, one of the first things you're told when you volunteer with refugees is to avoid asking about their journey. It's not fun. They get attacked, assaulted, they get sick, they can die, and they are dependent on smugglers who take advantage of their precarious situation to get their money.
My parents are old. They can let the little money they sold from their farm, gather the money, they empty their account for you. I foolishly trusted that person that did my sponsorship for me. I calculated the money. You know, I did the mathematics. When we have something, we would have gotten the land back. Don't worry. Give me 6 months. I was going to do a good job. Oh God.
Now, it's not surprising that anti-immigration advocates like Cash Jordan focus so much on smugglers. It allows them to displace their disregard for migrants onto someone else.
When they see this mass flow of people across the border, what they're looking at has been described to me as the largest form of modern slavery in the world.
Yeah, Fox News really cares about migrants being treated as slaves by smugglers. They really do. Areas that are not well regulated, where enforcement is difficult and where demands are high, tend to draw bad actors. It's a fact. Cash should know this, he's a real estate agent.
This can't be legal. This is it?
This is it, man.
What? What?
We're home.
If you're watching this and you're looking to move to the city, it is definitely possible. Don't say the rent's too high, excuses. If you want to move here bad enough and you have that dream, it's right here. Contact Cash. All the places that we've shown in this video, Cash is actually renting out, so they're all down below in the description, along with Cash's contact information.
Those who are in good positions can take advantage of these crises legally. Those who are in not so good positions take advantage of those crises illegally. Cash focuses on those who profit from immigration illegally. But what about those who do so legally? Because trust me, they make more money than the smugglers. In fact, in a few videos, Cash shows the Roosevelt Hotel, which has been used as a refugee shelter for a few years and is supposed to close soon. The hotel is criticized for receiving too much public money. The mayor of New York, Eric Adams, said it himself. Now, while it is true that the money spent for this shelter and on other shelters are quite high, it's important to explain why they are so high. In fact, the city isn't directly in charge of the hotel, like it is the case with Medicare and Medicaid, with the US Army. Public contracts are signed with private companies, which are expected to fulfill a set of duties. In each of these sectors, the prices of contracts have gone up, yet the services provided aren't necessarily better. In the case of the Roosevelt Hotel, NYC Comptroller found that nearly 80% of the $13.8 million paid to DocGo, the contractor, for expenses incurred during the first 2 months of the contract were inadequately supported or not allowed. This mismanagement led to bad living conditions for asylum seekers, like moldy rooms. In France, private contractors are also hired to take care of refugee shelters. In one of the shelters, investigators found refugees living 2x2 in tiny rooms. They saw only one induction hob working for the whole shelter, and they also saw mushrooms on furniture. This is what happens when you outsource public services to private contractors. They have barely any incentive outside the law to do a decent job. They keep refugees in bad living conditions, which can lead to worse physical health, mental health, which can potentially lead to antisocial behavior. Imagine having to share one induction hob with 20 strangers for weeks or even months. Ugh, I'm not the most patient person, I'm not gonna lie. And it's not just about the refugee shelters. The immigration and deportation economy runs on private contracts, eager to make the biggest profit margins possible while our politicians turn a blind eye. You remember earlier I briefly mentioned Sandra, a nurse from Serbia who came to France with her family. Well, one day, while she was in France, about 40 French policemen raided her place to send the family back to Serbia by plane. Some of the immigration officers traveled with them, and when they arrived in Belgrade, one of them said, "Oh, no worries, just leave Belgrade and go back to France." So that's what they did, and now they are back in France. Another immigration officer interviewed by the investigator confirmed that the priority is to meet deportation targets. You know, politicians want to be able to use big numbers during their speeches. And he also said that it's easier to target families who are already integrated rather than criminals who are more difficult to find. In the US, the American Immigration Council estimated that a mass deportation operation could cost, wait for it, $88 billion annually. And they established that for the same costs as pursuing mass deportation over 10 plus years, the United States could, one, build over 40,000 new elementary schools in communities around the nation, two, construct over 2.8 million new homes in communities around the nation, three, fund the Head Start program for nearly 79 years, four, pay full tuition and expenses for over 4.3 million people to attend a private college for 4 years, and over 8.9 million people to attend an in-state public college for 4 years. Five, buy a brand new car for 20.4 million people. Now, to be fully honest with you, Cash Jordan does mention the corporations and businesses who take advantage of migrant workers' precarious situations, but it feels like fake compassion, like that Fox interview we saw earlier. So yeah, I felt like it was important to debunk or at least nuance some of the arguments presented in the videos, but ultimately, saying that migrants are good for the economy, migrants bring new ideas and skills, are arguments that only resonate with a certain percentage of the population. I personally think the economic angle isn't the best way to approach this issue, as I know from experience that a lot of people who use the, you know, migrant hurt the economy argument do so not because they care about the economy, but because they don't want you to think they are bigots. So debunking such arguments can be beneficial for those who genuinely believe in them, but for others, it's useless. They will continue to be fervently anti-immigration because they are motivated by different things. You must have heard about the story of Kilmar Abrego Garcia. He had been living legally in Maryland since 2012, building a life with his wife Jennifer and their daughter. But in March 2025, ICE detained and deported him to El Salvador, even though a court had ordered that he not be removed. Officials later called it an administrative error. That error landed Kilmar in one of El Salvador's most notorious prisons, where he was thrown into a packed cell with gang members, threatened and traumatized. Under pressure, the government changed its story, suddenly accusing him of gang ties based on a 2019 incident where he was stopped wearing supposedly gang-associated clothing. His family and lawyers adamantly deny any connection to gangs. The US Supreme Court ordered his return, but the administration claimed it couldn't retrieve him from a foreign prison, sparking outrage and legal battles. Kilmar's story is more than a tragic error. It's a warning about what happens when systems forget the people they are supposed to protect. As shocking as it might seem, these kinds of expulsive policies actually have deep roots in American history. Groups in power have used expulsions as a way to protect what they saw as their community's values, safety, or identity. Back in the 1600s, the Puritans in Massachusetts kicked out dissenters like Anne Hutchinson or Roger Williams just for challenging their authority. Many other groups faced similar fates, especially women accused of witchcraft who were executed before that century even ended. Fast forward to the 18th century, the enlightened ideals of the time did not offer much relief. Thomas Jefferson, for example, believed that enslaved people could only be freed if they were also forced to leave the country, an idea that got rebranded as colonization and was widely accepted by white anti-slavery advocates, including Abraham Lincoln, for much of his career. Over time, these kinds of actions became more common, normalized, and sometimes formally legalized. In the early days of American democracy, during the Jacksonian era, expulsions didn't slow down, they intensified. Catholics, Mormons, abolitionists, Freemasons, and especially Native Americans were all targeted. Native peoples suffered the most brutal expulsion of all, pushed off their ancestral lands in the largest forced migration in US history. And guess what? It didn't stop there. For Black Americans, expulsion showed up in the form of segregation, disenfranchisement, redlining, the destruction of entire communities, and violence against those who tried to live in white neighborhoods. Immigrants who were seen as dangerous or radical faced deportation, harassment, and crackdowns by the government. Poor people were pushed out through evictions, denied housing or voting rights, and punished for simply being poor. Mass incarceration is one of the clearest modern examples of this long tradition of expulsion. When prisons were first introduced in the 19th century, they were supposed to be a human alternative to public punishments. But in practice, they just removed people from society, especially poor and marginalized groups, and forced them into hard labor and constant surveillance. Over time, prisons became the go-to response to social unrest and poverty. Politicians played on public fears about crime to justify harsher laws, and incarceration often came with long-lasting consequences like losing the right to vote. All of this history gives context to the US administration's popularity. The promise of expelling outsiders resonates with people who feel threatened by economic uncertainty, cultural change, or racial diversity. The administration paints a picture of American communities under siege and offers punishment for those seen as invaders, the other. History professor Stephen Hahn warns that, quote, as was true in the past, these are ethnic and political cleansings that should warn us of the illiberal castes infusing our democracy and of the dangerous road to its possible collapse, end quote. Today's version of expulsion might feel unprecedented in scale, but the instinct behind it, defining who belongs and who doesn't, and using power to cast people out, has always been part of Western power's history. I'm European, and this is part of our history too. I live in Ireland at the moment, and I recently learned that in the 19th century, the UK tried to solve what they saw as the Irish pauper problem by sending poor Irish migrants back to Ireland. They used old settlement and removal laws to do it, and over the years, hundreds of thousands of Irish people were forcibly deported. They continued to do so well into the 20th century. In 2018, the UK government wrongly detained, deported, and threatened to deport people, mostly from the Caribbean, who had lived in Britain legally for decades. This is known as the Windrush scandal. And finally, I'm going to talk about France and not just complain about the UK. My country, France, recently passed a law to loosen the rights of foreigners so that they can more easily be deported. Now, if I ended the video here, I'd feel like I wouldn't really answer all the questions I had when I started researching this. I first wanted to see if the narrative presented in Cash Jordan's videos was real. It isn't. There are a lot of lies in those videos. Then I wanted to know if this phenomenon is new, and clearly it isn't. So I have one question left. You know, I watched all the videos, I looked at the comment section, and what I saw in there wasn't just bigotry. It was excitement, joy, in the form of retribution.
Don't blame the cleanup crew. Blame the ones who made the mess.
Deport, deport, deport.
Clean up, clean up, just clean up. And make the city clean again.
You have a duty to this country to report these people.
So my question is very simple. Why do people love that content so much? Why do people feel excited about deportation? In 1975, Laura Mulvey published this, Visual Pleasure and Narrative Cinema. It's in this book that she theorized the male gaze. You know, it's the act of depicting women and the world in the visual arts and literature from masculine heterosexual perspective. Well, this idea of the male gaze was first and foremost based on what Mulvey called scopophilia, which means the pleasure of looking. we can see how this connects to the male gaze, but this notion of scopophilia can also be applied to anti-immigration sensationalism. The look in those videos isn't neutral, and what is being looked at is often passive, objectified, or dehumanized. It can be a mass of people speaking a different language, with their faces hidden, submitting to force. The way things are presented doesn't incentivize empathy, quite the contrary. That's why we say that the look is not neutral. It's kind of like role play, you see. Some have even argued that there's a form of sexual pleasure in seeing people submit to authority like the migrants are forced to. Now, we all know that once you watch one or two of those highly engaging videos, you're likely to see them again on your For You page. And we also know that the act of repeatedly connecting a specific emotion to an image, in our case the emotion is fear and the image is migrants, well, the repetition of that connection, emotion, image is what forges ideology. Sarah Ahmed, writer of The Cultural Politics of Immersion, explains that immersions don't just reside inside individuals, they stick to bodies, ideas, and social groups. Immersions circulate between people and are used to create boundaries between us and them. These immersions are enhanced by imagery, sound, narration, and editing. They become contagious online and lead to the formation of a community of people sharing the same effects, so the same emotions.
They should be scared. They broke our laws, and now they're running from the law. I would too.
Nothing better than seeing an ICE Raids compilation video dropping into my recommendations, popping a big bag of popcorn, grabbing a cold, crisp bottle of Coca-Cola, and pressing play. Deport! Thank you, President Trump.
If they leave New York and come to New Jersey, I will definitely call ICE.
Migrants become what Ahmed calls sticky signs, meaning objects of repeated emotional investment. The immigration agent, on the other hand, is the force of retribution. They can surveil, raid, and impose harsh policies. It's cathartic for the viewer. It's emotionally satisfying. Those repeated emotional responses naturalize political ideologies like nationalism, xenophobia, law and order politics. Emotions make these ideologies feel common sense. So we talked about the pleasure of seeing pain inflicted on others, but keep in mind that many of the people who enjoy those videos will sooner or later also become the victims of those ideologies. No one is safe here. If you think that what's at stake here is legal versus illegal, then I'm sorry to inform you that you're being fooled. This is not about the law. In fact, the elites are not the best at keeping up with the law. We've seen it times and times again, they tend to disregard it if it doesn't work their way. The goal for them is to find a scapegoat to legitimize increasingly restrictive measures which ultimately hurt everyone. It starts with marginalized groups and then expand to other groups, and soon you'll be so deep in it that you won't even notice it. You'll continue to naively consent like a good, law-abiding citizen. I saw this times and times again in the comments, in Cash Jordan's videos. They are the good, law-abiding citizens, and they are the criminals. The viewer feel morally superior to be on the good side, and feel even better about praising those who, like them, are on the good side. Now, if everyone had this mentality, we would be pretty fucked as a civilization. You know, what allowed us to get out of monarchies, to force our officials to write Bill of Rights, to have the standards of living that we have today, is the recognition that being on the so-called good side sometimes meant being on the side of injustice. And we are very lucky to have had people who understood that and disobeyed. And you know what, I don't even need to sound this dramatic. You know, if unlicensed vendors are out there serving food to New Yorkers, that probably means that there is a need for it. So the city should change their policy and let more vendors apply for a license. When a law is stupid or doesn't work, you can change that law. If farmers or medical centers have to rely on undocumented workers, then let's make sure they can do so legally. If visa programs are bad or create imbalances between residents and foreigners, let's improve the programs.
En mi persona no quisiera que dejaran de traer gente porque son muy buenos trabajadores. He tenido compañeros que le echan muchas ganas, trabajan muy duro y lo hacen por necesidad también. Pero la misma necesidad tenemos nosotros.
If we want things to be better for any group of workers, we need to make things better for every group of workers.
Okay guys, we're reaching the end of this video. Obviously, this is a very complex issue and I don't have all the answers. My humble opinion is that the very concept of borders is just weird when you think about it. I grew up in the north of France, right next to the Belgian border, and that border was marked by a stone, a random stone. And I remember my kid self thinking that this didn't make any sense, that past that stone, I was in a different country with different rules. And you know, at least in Europe, borders follow rivers and mountains, but look at the US. I mean, this is not even cute. Why did they do that? You can't disagree that borders are a weird human invention and that they've caused a lot of unnecessary drama. Now, sure, we have to deal with them, they won't disappear overnight, and so what I hope I did in this video is to show that it doesn't matter how complex immigration is, what's crucial is that we approach it with humanity, with a recognition of individuals' rights, and I believe that that's how we can create policies that will facilitate the integration of new people in harmony with the communities that welcome them. As always, the conversation continues in the comments section. Don't forget to like, to subscribe if it's not already done. Thank you to Incogni for sponsoring the video. A big thank you to my patrons for their support, and a special thank to top-tier patrons Ron Wing, Fred, Hong Jing Wong, Paul-Louis Agenot, George Kweme, Wolf Gratz, Patrick Barton, Devish Mohanmina, Jeff Lee, Taya Matin, Yilan, Nick, Brandon, Jim Siddle, Ojoal, Pablo, Patrick, Boris, Ria, Corey G, Tristan, Christopher, Ian, Donage, Alex. That's it for me. I'll see you very soon. Salut!